We know that rigorous policy analysis takes time. And so I think there's this tension between kind of wanting a really robust body of evidence and needing these performance metrics to indicate what to do and where to invest in immediately right now.
I'm JB Wogan, and welcome back to On the Evidence, a show that examines what we know about today's most urgent challenges and how we can make progress in addressing them. My guest today is Catherine Klosik, Director of Applied Research at the Center for Government Excellence at Johns Hopkins University. Catherine recently wrote a Roadmap for Policy Change, which is a step-by-step guide for city officials who want to use evidence in improving their communities. It's free, online, and written in straightforward, plain language prose. I was excited to sit down with Catherine, not only because of her current work helping city governments improve their use of data and research, but also because she's been on the other side, at a nonprofit and in government, trying to discern meaningful information behind the numbers. Before coming to Hopkins, she was a program director for an anti-hunger nonprofit in Baltimore and a senior analyst for StateStat in the Maryland governor's office. Stat, as in statistics, is shorthand for the idea that a government executive can manage his or her agencies more effectively by gathering performance data on a regular basis, discussing the results with staff, and then using the data to allocate resources as wisely as possible. Then-Mayor Martin O'Malley created a STAT program in Baltimore and brought the model statewide when he became governor. Now states, counties, and cities have adopted similar STAT programs, albeit all with their own local flavor. So Catherine and I chat about the STAT model and how it relates to the evidence-based policy movement in government. Today, Catherine works for GovX, which is part of a larger initiative called What Works Cities, which launched in 2015 with financial support from Bloomberg Philanthropies, the foundation created by another former mayor, Michael Bloomberg. And for people who don't know what GovX is, what's the shorthand description?
Sure. So our mission is to help governments use data and evidence to make better decisions to improve the lives of residents.
Okay. And how does it actually go about trying to do that?
Yeah. So for our first 3 years, we were really working, again, with governments, with city governments with populations between 100,000 and 1 million to help assess their current practices and their capacity to improve their practices around data management and data use. So that was kind of the first step, is this assessment. And then with some of those governments, we actually moved forward with technical assistance projects lasting about 6 months or so, in which our team would dive deep into our kind of bag of tricks and provide resources and guidance that was free of charge to a city champion and sometimes other city employees as well around practices like conducting a data inventory or setting performance goals. So not the sexiest stuff. We didn't dig right into kind of the predictive analytics where a lot of cities want to go, but really teaching cities the foundational practices and then building this community of 100 cities or so where they can kind of do some peer learning and share their practices and experiences. Now we've added on this applied research role, so we're really trying to connect some of the research that comes out of Johns Hopkins University and other places into that technical assistance work with cities. So we're helping cities understand a little bit more about the policy in addition to the practice.
Okay. And so you mentioned that you used to work at StateStat, mm-hmm. as did your boss, Beth Blauer. I was just wondering, what is the connection between those kinds of STAT programs which are proliferating and popular around the country and the work that you do today?
Yeah, I think we've seen the STAT programs, performance management programs, really evolve from being more about kind of a pragmatic city leader use or state leader using it to improve efficiency and effectiveness of service delivery on a departmental basis. That's kind of how it started out. And it's really evolved to being more outcome focused. So city leaders want to look at things like trash pickup or responsiveness to 311 calls about rats, which is a very real issue in Baltimore City. And so those measures might exist, but now a city leader is looking at more of an outcome goal. So like community health, where those two indicators might still be something that is being measured, but now it's toward an overall goal of the health of a neighborhood or community. And we've also seen additional data points being brought in. So things like citizen satisfaction survey data or other survey measures that city leaders are using increasingly. So again, this shift from kind of output to outcomes. And I think that's also helped city leaders think about, well, what are the evidence-based policies and practices that I can use to move the needle in this way? Leaders are recognizing that performance management frameworks and programs are a great way to monitor progress toward whatever outcome they're trying to achieve and to see whether their policies and practices are getting the desired outcome. So how, are they getting what they're paying for, essentially?
You've been, between your time at State Stat and the work you're doing today, you've basically seen a decade of evidence-based policy. And I was wondering, for someone with your perspective, how things have changed. How do you think evidence-based policy has evolved over the last 10 years?
City leaders want to look at kind of what other cities are doing, what other governments are doing, and figure out how that might apply in their city and in their county, whatever the case may be. And so there's this, I think, natural tension that's arising where decision makers need timely data points. They need, you know, performance measures to indicate kind of what to do really almost on a daily basis. And we know that rigorous policy analysis takes time. And so I think there's this tension between kind of wanting a really robust body of evidence and needing these performance metrics to indicate what to do and where to invest in immediately right now. And so that's interesting. And I think that we'll kind of see how that plays out. And that's one thing that we kind of tried to address in the roadmap is almost reassuring city leaders that you don't necessarily need, you know, randomized control trials for everything that you're going to try to implement in your city. Sometimes you can kind of generate your own evidence.
Catherine packs a lot of interesting ideas in the roadmap. Policy research is often associated with crunching the numbers, reporting the statistical significance of results, making sure you have large enough sample sizes, that sort of methodological stuff. But Catherine talks about the importance of people in research, as in you need a variety of people's perspectives to ask better questions, to get a fuller picture of the problem that you're trying to address, and to increase the chances that whatever you change will actually stick. That means consulting with frontline staff, charged with implementing the policy change. That means partnering with the subject matter experts outside of city government, such as people with lived experience in the problem you're trying to solve. That also means forming partnerships across sectors. Given everything Catherine covers in the roadmap, I asked how she would summarize the main idea in a bumper sticker.
So my answer is a little on the snarky side. it's an acronym, so get ready.
Okay.
DARE, to always rely on evidence. D-A-R-E. Have you heard that acronym before? So the roadmap, actually, the first line is remember the DARE program. And so I say that this is a bit of a snarky answer because we actually talked about DARE a lot when we were developing the roadmap as sort of an example of how things can go pear-shaped. And so, you know, the DARE program, when it began in the 80s, was super politically popular. But once public health researchers sort of started looking at the impacts, you know, it was found to not really reduce drug use among teens and in some cases to actually have detrimental effects, yet it kept spreading. And here, you know, we're still talking about it, you know, some 30 years later. And so so the kind of roadmap and the theme throughout is coming back to this piece of relying on evidence. But of course, there's a lot of discussion about what evidence is and how to analyze it and implement it in a way that, again, makes sense for your community.
I like that. I like that. It has got that double meaning, a little bit of irony, and ties back to the opening of the guide. So why write this roadmap and why write it right now?
When I started this position as director of applied research, I wanted to kind of dig into the actual effective and ineffective policies that cities were trying, and then decided that it actually might make more sense to take a step back and figure out where there are barriers to using evidence and data in decision making and kind of why some policies spread and are used and why others are not. And so we actually started out with a series of interviews with cities in our network and just kind of asked them some open-ended questions about their policy making and decision process. And what we found were a lot of similarities and then some pieces that stood out that didn't exist in every place. And one of the pieces that that we heard in cities that had been successful in achieving some of their policy goals was the role of leadership in setting a goal and saying, we're going to end homelessness, for instance. So we kind of mapped out those steps and then really just dug into that process. And pretty much each step ended up being a chapter in the roadmap. I think the time is right, not just, you know, for GovX and because we're taking a more, you know, deeper dive into policy, but I think there's a lot of discussion about science and evidence in government and decision making. There have been several, you know, marches for science and that type of thing. And so we're talking about science. When we're talking about science, we're talking about evidence and vice versa. So I think it makes a lot of sense from sort of the national perspective as well.
There's a sentence I really liked in the roadmap. You write, this roadmap is meant to empower cities to take ownership of the policy change process, to frame problems in a way that creates a demand for evidence, and to form long-term relationships with political, policy, practitioner, research allies. So what's your advice for local government officials who want to create that demand for evidence?
Find a partner, either inside or outside of city government. It's probably going to be outside of city government, like a university partner or local nonprofit that can really be a partner in evaluation so that, you know, if a city is thinking about trying a new program or making any change to a program, that can be a great sort of opportunity for a natural experiment. And so bringing in an evaluator to test that and to kind of contribute to the body of evidence, I think, is really key. And then another great thing that can happen is in developing these long-term partnerships between, you know, city government and universities could actually even affect the research that is coming out of universities. You know, in going through this roadmap process, learned a lot more about kind of the incentives of researchers. And of course, funding is a huge incentive. And so if there's an opportunity for a researcher to learn a little bit more about the needs of, you know, practitioners and that type of thing, that could actually shape the research that happens and really, you know, again, contribute to the body of evidence. So again, you know, just reaching out and finding partnerships outside of city government is going to be key. There's also a lot in the kind of policy change political science literature about how sort of partnerships on one-time evaluations maybe aren't the most sustainable. And so to actually, you know, create a peer network or participate in a peer network that brings practitioners and researchers together can actually hopefully help to shift the conversation as well so that the evidence and research coming out of universities is more helpful and meaningful to governments.
So, I mean, we're sitting here today in the offices of Mathematica. They are obviously one of many organizations that, you know, tries to partner with government. So, you know, for research organizations that want to help build that demand for evidence, is there anything that they can do?
Yeah, I think just make it sort of be deferential, I would say, to really to residents. I mean, letting governments know that, you know, the needs of residents and outcomes of residents are why you'd want to partner with them, and making it clear that there's no, you know, other agenda going on. Because I think that's part of the sort of distrust or concern that an evaluation organization might be coming in to test, you know, the population or whatever the case may be. So I think just kind of putting it on the table that the partnership is about finding solutions, finding, you know, building a body of evidence that can help people be better off and being deferential, I think, really goes a long way.
One of the ways that I've been thinking about the roadmap is it's almost like a literacy guide for evidence. Mm-hmm. And there are different tiers, there are different sort of different quality, but it, you know, while an RCT may be the best, that the first goal is just to sort of be thinking clearly about and intentionally about, well, what evidence exists, what is the quality of evidence, and how can we act based on that information?
Yeah, and I think that first step, I mean, that's something that we found is a barrier, is just understanding where to go, you know, to find the available evidence. I think there are some great resources. The Pew Results First Clearinghouse is a great, you know, database of pieces of evidence, but that's just the first step. And then the next step is, you know, we include a framework in the roadmap for evaluating the evidence itself, and then for going through a process to understand how it might be applied and implemented, you know, in your city or county or whatever the case may be, how to develop a pilot, again, how to sort of test whether you're getting the desired effects, and even how to link it back to a performance management framework or program as well.
So what's next for the roadmap? Do you plan on rolling it out with partners or promoting it more or writing a second one?
What we're doing now is designing what we're calling communities of practice, where we are trying to, I'll say, seed some of these like mini networks that we've sort of been alluding to, and really bring together governments, but also nonprofits, school districts and other partners that are focused on a certain issue, and to really help them use and work through some of the tools and guidance in the roadmap, and then figure out what's helpful, what's not, and then hopefully iterate on the roadmap itself, but also maybe developing out new tools. And I think probably most importantly, we want to capture the sort of results of those communities and any kind of stories that come out of that.
Okay, and if people want to read this roadmap that we've been talking about, what's the URL?
Yeah, so it's govx.jhu.edu, and then just click on Applied Research, and then the roadmap is actually the first link there.
And are you on Twitter, both you and GovX?
Yes, GovX is @gov_EX, and I'm @Kat_JK.
All right, perfect. Kat, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me, JB. Good to see you.
Thanks again to our guest, Catherine Klosik. We have an edited Q&A based on this interview on the Mathematica blog, where we include a link to the roadmap. And thanks for listening to On the Evidence, the Mathematica podcast. If you like what you hear, please subscribe for future episodes on SoundCloud or Apple Podcasts. You can also follow me on Twitter @JB Wogan.